It's the week that was with Joe Palmisano.
Thank you for joining me this morning. When I did the radio show on WHBC, I did shows that grasped me. So the Anthony Harris shows, I started looking into it. It became a personal mission to get this story out and revive it again.
This is a story of a 12-year-old young man whose life was turned inside out after being convicted of a murder that was never really proven. And a defense attorney who never gave up in spite of insurmountable odds.
Good morning, everyone. I am Joe Palmisano, filling in for Jordan Miller today. In 2015, we did a few shows here at WHBC involving the saga of three lives, Anthony Harris, Taryn Hale, and most importantly, Devin Dunover. A 5-year-old girl whose life was stolen at 5 years. Since her murder, these three lives and the life of a community has remained in limbo after a botched investigation, wrongful conviction, and the loss of a passionate public defender. Recently, the story was again revived by ABC. And on that episode of 2020, titled Gone Before the Storm, what I would like to do today for you is an epilogue of our stories and the story of 2020 that was on 2020, and just ask the question, where do we go from here? Yes, Anthony Harris has been vindicated. Taryn Hale is in a great place in his life. But there remains a 5-year-old girl, Devin Dunover, whose murderer has never been held accountable. In a community that has never really been able to move on because of essentially no investigation and a rush to judgment. So now, for maybe the last time, we have an opportunity to end this seemingly endless madness and bring closure to all involved. I believe in my heart that someone knows the truth of who killed Devin Dunover. And the only way this injustice can be fixed is for that someone to come forward out of guilt, or of knowledge that has literally been eating him or her up since 1998. I truly believe that the majority of those in New Philadelphia want this. I truly believe that. And I believe it more than ever with people like Ryan Steyer and Sheriff Orvis Campbell, who are now down there, down in New Philly, who are in charge. I believe in those two men, and I believe that those two men want the truth. They want to know what's going on. They want to dig into this, and I believe in those two. I think you've got two wonderful leaders down there in Ryan Steyer and Sheriff Campbell. Unfortunately, the rush to judgment of Anthony Harris led to the failure to truly investigate this crime properly. And it left a void in the examination of others. And as time passes, it becomes harder and harder to get to the truth of this. So if we let this moment pass and don't grasp it now and bring closure to this crime, what will happen with this? That's the purpose of this show. An epilogue, so to speak. And a beginning. A look at the past. And also a look forward to where we go from here. It lies in the hands of those of you who hear this. And those that you influence. Today we will hear from three people who were intimately involved in the murder case of Devin Dunover. Amy Smith, the new general manager, the now general manager of WJER radio station in New Philly, who was a new employee on that Saturday morning when Devin went missing. And Nancy Molnar, staff writer for the Times Reporter, who began her journey at the paper in about 2015, the time that we aired our show here on WHBC. And she has since picked up this story. It has been something that has been important to her over her time there at the Times Reporter. And Taryn Hale, a gentleman who, whether you agree with him or not, is a true hero. A man who sacrificed all he knew, all he had, to pursue and go after what his conscience was telling him was the truth. Taryn is a real, I've said this before, he's Atticus Finch. If anybody's read To Kill a Mockingbird, Taryn Hale is Atticus Finch. He's a man who persevered through incredible adversity, being attacked by the judge, being attacked by the prosecutor, being attacked by then the editor of the Times Reporter, lost his livelihood, had to move, lost his home, and really had to start on a whole new journey. So you're going to hear from all three of them. Again, my goal and theirs is to bring closure to the murder of Devin Dunnevar, and through that, to put an end to the legacy of incompetence by the investigator, the interrogator, the prosecutor, the judge, the newspaper editor at that time, and finally free the citizens of New Philadelphia from that tainted legacy, along with bringing closure for Anthony Taryn and a much-needed closure for the life of Devin Dunnevar. When we come back, we'll begin speaking and hearing from Amy Smith. She is now the general manager at WJER Radio in New Philadelphia. Stay tuned. We are back. This is Joe Palmisano sitting in for Jordan Miller this Friday. Beautiful day outside. You know, a lot of people may say, and I thought during the break, I thought to myself, oh, you're bringing this up again. Why are you bringing this up again? Until we get justice in this case, I'm going to keep bringing it up, whether I'm on the radio or whether I'm just talking about it to people. It's an important case. It's a case that has made national news, as well as being a case that doesn't die in this area. I know people in New Philadelphia still talk about it. I know people that around here who still talk about that case. So the idea behind this is to finally get justice for Devin Dunnevar and justice for Anthony Harris, Taryn Hale, and everybody in New Philadelphia, and get this thing done. And like I said, I believe you've got two people in Sheriff Orvis Campbell and Ryan Steyer who are going to get to the bottom of this eventually. They're going to get to the point, you know, that I believe in them. I believe that it's important to them. I also want to say that if people have information, I'm hoping it stirs up somebody who says after all this time, something's been eating at them, that they call Sheriff Campbell. Don't call the police department. The police department in New Philly won't do anything with it. If you're the, you know, I wouldn't if I was the chief of police and I was married to the former prosecutor who vehemently went after Anthony. That doesn't create a very happy home. So I would call Sheriff Orvis Campbell and work that way if you have information that could possibly lead to that. Again, as I said, we spoke to Amy Smith, and I was able to sit and talk with her. And Amy Smith, interesting, and you'll hear this, was just a brand new employee at WJER. She was the only one at the station that Saturday. She was supposed to be playing a Cleveland Indians game, and there was a tornado warning coming in, and also there was a call of a missing five-year-old girl that Saturday afternoon. And Amy had to handle that, and she's been involved in this case ever since. Here was my discussion with Amy Smith.
You have worked at WJER for...
This is my 26th year.
You were in New Philly, I assume, at the time in 1998, at the time of all this.
I was. I was working the day that Devin went missing. I was working alone. I took the phone call, the first phone call that came in. I don't know who it was now. Looking back, I think it was a neighbor, somebody who had become aware that Lori was looking for her daughter. At this point, the police weren't involved. Nobody was thinking abduction. It was just that Devin had left home and no one was sure where she was. So somebody called the station to say, if somebody calls in and finds a little girl, this is who we are and who we're looking for.
And what time was that? Do you remember?
It was mid-afternoon. We had started to get some watches and warnings from the weather service. So that's why that stuck out in my mind, because I was thinking about a little girl being out there when we were starting to see severe weather warnings come in.
People were already looking for her in the afternoon. Who were these just random?
Neighbors
small?
Had become aware. I think, okay. You know, they were out calling her name. They were looking around, looking in some garages. I'm going to say it was maybe 3 or 4 o'clock. It's, you know, it's hard to remember exactly,
okay.
But I know it was several hours before my boss arrived and my news director arrived. And then the police called with that official phone call.
What was going on from the time of all the trials were over, all the civil suit, everything was done. It was put to bed. Between that time and our show in 2015, was it ever talked about?
Not that I recall. It was something that crossed my mind often because of that day making such a huge impact on me and my radio career. I would Google Anthony occasionally to see if I could find out. I just really wanted to find out if he was okay. Where was he? What was going on in his life? It crossed my mind. I know it crossed other people's minds, but it was not a topic of public conversation. Other than there was another murder a couple years after this happened. The guy's in jail. His name's Matt Vaca. And there was some question about if maybe he could have been involved in Devin's murder. He stabbed a young girl in the neck and she died. He abducted her from a local video store. So that brought this up again. But I think he was questioned. They did bring him back to Tuscarawas County and they decided that he had not had anything to do with that. So that's the only other time I really remember it kind of getting stirred up again.
Okay, so then 2015, the show happened. I don't know if that got stirred up again down there.
I'd imagine it was a topic of conversation among public officials at that time. You know, that did not reach our local media. I don't recall social media chatter about it at the time, but, you know, it was 7 years ago. So
right.
To me, this story still feels like it happened yesterday. So uh-huh. Sometimes my timeline of it is fuzzy because it does not seem like it has been that many years.
Okay, so now 2020 comes out. Now that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
That's nationwide. It shines a spotlight on New Philly. And frankly, it isn't a good spotlight. Would you agree with that?
Yes and no.
Okay.
I was concerned that it would paint the entire town and everybody who lives there as being out to get Anthony. And I did not feel that it came across that way.
I agree.
You know, you had the three witnesses who have been trying for years to be heard with, you know, what they saw that day when they were searching. You know, it showed at the time the people singing and praying in front of the courthouse in support of Anthony. I've never viewed this case as a community being out to get Anthony.
Very good point, Amy.
You know, so I was very concerned about how it would portray us as neighbors, as a neighborhood. Of course, there were people who thought he did it, and there were a lot of people who thought he didn't do it. It was controversial from the beginning. And the day the Times reporter printed the transcript of the confession in the paper is when I think a lot of people turned their opinion. when they saw that, and I felt like 2020 kind of didn't go far enough in showing how long that went on and how much pressure was actually on Anthony. You know, having read that transcript in the past, they kept kind of showing one part over and over again. There was so much more there. Once somebody read that transcript, I don't know how they could think that this was an honest confession.
Right.
So, you know, a positive light on how the local judicial process worked in that case, no. But as far as the community goes, I don't think it was ever a community out to get this boy.
Okay. All right. So the show comes out. Obviously, it really drags this up again.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on down there now? I suspect, and tell me if I'm wrong, that it's an initial blow. People talk about it. People kind of take sides a little bit. But then it's just starting to go away again.
It is. You know, it's kind of the era we've come to live in with social media and the hot topic of the moment. And because we're all so hyper aware of everything that goes on in the world now, nothing seems to shock us anymore. You know, I think this is a symptom of that. You know, it's the hot topic for a week. We were on TV and wasn't this terrible? And I hope they find justice. That's what I keep seeing on social media. I hope they find the killer. But who's they? Who's going to do that? And how are they going to do it? Because as far as I know, there's not some box of DNA sitting around just waiting for a match. Once they zeroed in on Anthony, they stopped looking for evidence and collecting things. You know, there's some cold cases out there where there's DNA that never matched with anyone. But as far as I know, we don't have that here. So short of someone coming forward and confessing, I don't know how they would at this point find the real killer.
Is it, though, frustrating that there seems to be no motivation to do that?
Sure.
I would think. So here's the other part that I have to say. If I were the father of a child who was murdered in 1998, I would be at that courthouse daily.
Mm-hmm.
I would chain myself to the doors until they started looking for the murderer. Where is the family?
I think, you know, I hesitate to give any hypothesis on the radio and open myself up to any risk, but I think a lot of people have some theories about why the family was so insistent that it was Anthony and why they have not continued to search for the real killer.
I am not here to cast judgment, but just the emotional part of it. If I had lost a five-year-old child, I would be frantic to this day. That would be my number one mission in life, is to find this person and to demand that the people we pay to find people do it and not go 15 years or 10 years until another show comes off to find this person. And so that's been the frustrating part for me in this whole story, is it became very personal to me. And we have a five-year-old, and that's what I said on the 2020 show. It's not over.
Right.
We have a five-year-old girl who was stabbed multiple times and killed in the infancy of her life. And there is no urgency for people down there to do something. You know, you're there. How do you carry on with that, knowing that there's no movement?
You know, you talked about the family not being at the courthouse every day demanding justice. If they're not, I think they're convinced it was Anthony. And the people who were involved at the time are convinced it was Anthony. And nothing that has been said, not what you've done in 2015, not what 2020 has done now, has lit a fire under anyone. The family's not here lighting that fire under anyone. I think everybody wants justice for Devin. You know, the show kind of focused 2020 on justice for Anthony, which he certainly deserves. But let's not forget that Devin did not get justice either. Not even close. As you said, her life was ended before it ever got a chance to start. She deserves justice. And you know, I don't know if there was a feeling that this was an isolated incident. You know, we didn't go on to see some sort of crime spree after this, you know, a serial killer on the loose. I don't know why people weren't more just afraid. Look for justice because we're afraid there's a killer out here on the loose. Something about this made people feel like there wasn't a further threat. And I don't know why, If they've made up their minds, everybody has a different little theory about who did it and why, but there never seemed to be a fear motivating them to seek justice. And then there's that small town power situation where the people who are in charge have a lot of influence over a lot of people, and rocking that boat can disrupt people's work lives, church lives, personal relationships, whether their kid is the starting pitcher on the Little League team. You know, it's small town politics.
Yeah.
So sometimes people hesitate to get involved because of the impact of it. It's not a big city where you're an anonymous person. Nobody's anonymous there.
Yeah. And we saw that in Taryn's life.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
For years, he was gone. He lost his passion for law. He had to move out of the community. He wasn't really, the story wasn't really brought up again until 2015, and then now in 2020, and he got some kind of vindication, finally. But we saw that with him, how it just destroyed him. I mean, he gave up his whole career
right.
for Anthony. Do people understand what a hero he was, or they still look at him like kind of a pariah for standing up against everybody?
As far as I know, the community, especially now that they've seen 2020, you know, when you were living in this moment, this dragged on for years from the initial disappearance of the little girl to the civil suit and all of that. So you got pieces of that and memories faded. But seeing 2020 and really realizing what he was up against, number one, and how hard he fought when he could have just walked away and left it behind him, but he kept fighting for Anthony. I saw nothing but positive comments and support for Taryn and for Anthony, and a lot of people saying, what are we going to do about this now? Who's in charge of figuring this out now?
And I guess the last thing I want to ask you is there ever healing? Is there ever truly an end, a closure, until they find the person who did it?
I think that's the only way you could get closure. And even then, there's still this wound that's left from knowing that the people who were supposed to find the justice let it go decades beyond when it happened. So I don't know if you ever fully move past that. You know, it was a terrible moment for a lot of people in the community, you know, from the people who were involved in law enforcement and courts and the community at large and the media. I think a lot of people had put it in the back of their mind, and 2020 came up and people were saying, oh, yeah, I remember that. And the details had become foggy. But some of the people who were involved then have until recently or are still involved in the public eye. As long as that's the case, you know, this kind of still sits there as a black eye on the community. And I've always felt attached to it. And I think being a part of the 2020 show was kind of some closure for me personally in some small way of being able to reach out to Anthony and say, I've never forgotten about you. I've always, you know, thought that you got mistreated here and not everybody in this community is against you. As far as justice for Devin, it's going to take more than me. It's going to take a lot of us.
Yeah.
It's going to take you, a lot of people listening to this show. You know, and from a legal aspect, like I said, I don't know if it's a case that can be solved because I don't know what evidence is out there. So, you know, whether they feel there's nothing to dig up because they have nothing to go on, but I don't think that we should just let the subject die.
I want to take a moment to thank my producer of the show, Billy Beebe. He was instrumental in the hours and hours of work that it took to put this show together and get these interviews done and everything. So I want to thank him. In 1998, Taryn Hale was a young, probably likely underpaid public defender who could have rolled over and just allowed the process to take place. He didn't. He kept standing up. He kept fighting. He kept persevering and ended up getting Anthony Harris out of juvenile prison where he was wrongly convicted. Ended up having to move. Life was kind of in turmoil for a while, lost his passion for law. And where is he now? You saw a little bit of that in 2020 if you saw the show. But if you hadn't, or even if you had, how is Taryn doing today? I spoke with Taryn Hale and asked him that question.
He certainly brings back memories. It was a difficult time. There was right after the decision when he was convicted. I remember George Forbes and Dennis LeConte, you know, gathering their things and going out to their car, and they opened up the trunk. They were putting things in the car, and there was a part of me that just wanted to jump in there with them and get out of town. It was really hard. Just the overall sense, there was some community support that he did get railroaded, that was unfair, but it wasn't very vocal. It wasn't clear just, you know, what kind of numbers there were really in support. It was very clear to me that I could not raise my family there at that point. I did not want to continue to be in the community and having that sense that, of what happened, and always feeling like maybe I wasn't wanted or my views weren't being honored. It was helpful. I mean, you know, finding the attorneys, Dan Warren and Jeffrey Mearns, to find them up in Cleveland was a real respite for me, was a real relief off my shoulders. To have that firm, they were originally with Thompson Hine at the time, to have that firm and support really helped take some of the weight off my shoulders and made me feel like that part of it was good. You know, it was very emotional. So, but then they still left me still in this county where it was difficult.
I think there's a feeling almost now after the 2020 show that many people would welcome you back to New Philadelphia, and that you're seen more in the light of how you should be seen than how you were then.
I agree that after the 2020 show, I have received a lot of posts. And I've received some communication from people where they were in support of us during the time, but they didn't know what to do or how to convey it. I know he had one teacher who spoke up, and she really expressed those feelings, and her piece is actually available on the ABC website. You know, that was part of the pressure on me, was that you have everybody in official capacity saying he did it, they have evidence, and then you just have my voice saying, no, they don't, they're not being honest. And so every other person who said that they were wrong, their only basis for saying they were wrong was my voice. And that made me very nervous in terms of having that responsibility. And I did not know, you know, how to convey it to the public, because even the local newspaper was just completely on board with the prosecution and left no room there for doubt. And I was very, you know, I was successful in getting the Akron Beacon Journal reporter, Janet Frankson, who was a young reporter at the time. I was able to get her on a kind of open-minded, at least, to really explore what I was saying, and publishing several articles as well as some opinion pieces by their editorial board and support. But that doesn't get read very widely in Tuscarawas County. So I do feel the sense that the public was kind of, you know, misled by everyone, and that really they did not get a fair presentation of the facts to work with, to deal with the fact that a five-year-old girl was terribly murdered in their community, and the whole thing just turned into chaos around scapegoating Anthony and not really addressing a proper investigation.
You spoke about this in our first interview that we had in 2015, but what happened to you as an attorney as far as the passion is concerned?
That's kind of difficult. Because it overlaps with so many different things. Essentially, what I can say is that prior to this case, I felt like I had a pretty good reputation with the judges in the county. I felt respected. My word meant something. And I enjoyed representing those who otherwise couldn't afford an attorney. It was a very positive kind of relationship that I had with their work, that I was fulfilling a need that was, and doing so in a very quality way. And I never felt like I had to watch my back because of I felt supported and trusted by people. And that just all changed with this trial. It just really, the whole thing just kind of powered my view on it all. And I did not feel, I felt really disrespected, especially by Judge Kate, in terms of how she conducted that trial. And it was, you know, and as a public defender, I'm basically individually subsidizing this system by being underpaid in comparison to other positions of lawyering that is available. But like I said, I had to get out of there. I could not raise my family there. I have four children. and I did not want them to have this animosity that I was feeling. And yet, when we left New Philadelphia, we sold our house and had to move, and it was a very sad day. My wife and I both cried as we were leaving, because we had a very picturesque life there, and we had a wonderful support from our neighbors. It was very hard to leave.
After the appeal happened, now it's all done. Was there a sense at the end of this of emptiness, of what do I do now?
When I left New Philly, I took the first job out of town I could find, and it was in Columbus, and it did not go well. And I was scrambling for several years trying to find the right place to land. And we left right after the appeals was decided. The way the decision came down in the Court of Appeals and the way it was reported by the local paper, it was not clear that Anthony was innocent. There was ambiguity. Certainly the newspaper encouraged ambiguity about the fact that he's still the one. The prosecutor and the judge both affirmatively stated as such that he was still the primary suspect, if not the one guilty. That was very unresolved. The civil case itself, I wasn't involved with directly, but I would get reports from time to time from Dan Warren about the progress, and then eventually the civil settlement. The settlement was in some ways certainly a vindication. I don't think it was well covered in Tuscarawas County, but certainly a lot of information came out there that made it very clear, and I think was presented somewhat with the 2020 piece, that Anthony was, in fact, an innocent. And at that point, I was outside of, I was living in outside of Dayton, Ohio, and had a job and came. It gave me some sense of freedom. Prior to that, I really couldn't talk about the case much without really becoming very emotional and very upset about it all. This was in 2009. It was the first time that I could really start feeling better about things in that sense that there was some justice here for Anthony, at least.
What were your initial thoughts when I called you? And this had kind of just went away. And now all of a sudden, this guy wants to bring it all up again. What were your thoughts?
That we had that article in the American Lawyer magazine with the settlement. And that was, like you said, that was kind of, it kind of was the capstone to kind of present the story at that point. I remember very distinctly receiving your call. Periodically over the years, I would get calls from people inquiring a little bit. And I always, very leery in terms of what their motivations were and what angle they were trying to present. And so when I got your call, I was very skeptical, and I never heard of you, and I had never listened to that your radio station there at all. But I felt I could hear the passion in your heart. You conveyed to me the sincerity of what you were trying to do. It did, it sparked for me the fact that there still was this unresolved issue, that the person responsible for this hasn't been found accountable and properly charged, something that I've always wanted for Anthony.
We are back, and we continue with my discussion that I had with Taryn Hale, the public defender who was heroic in the case of Anthony Harris and Devin Dunover. My fear is that if not grasped to the fullest at this point, it will die again, and no one will do anything. Do you have that fear, too, a little bit?
I care very much, Joe, and I think you know that. I really do feel that we need justice for Devin Dunover. And I feel that there is a momentum that has been brought up through your efforts, greatly, and through them leading to the ABC story. I believe that the time is now or never in terms of how the ages go and the people involved are, some of them no longer with us. I'm hopeful. I've reached out to the county prosecutor, Ryan Steyer, and I know that he is, more than willing to work on this as information comes in. He certainly has, I think, shown to me a commitment to doing what he can You know, the thing is that this case started with right after his arrest, the prosecutor at the time had a press conference. And she told everybody, Anthony did it. There are no other suspects. This case is done. And all we're doing is placement for him. And I felt like this thing was being set in concrete. And I had to act fast to get the public not to go there and to reach out to the public and say, no, it's not over. We don't believe Anthony did it. And please come forward and start sharing your stories about what happened. And the three searchers that you saw on ABC 2020 were really a direct result of that press conference that I did. And trying to get people to come forward. And that's kind of the same momentum that we're still working with. And I believe that once people understand, and I think they have, like you said, from the 2020 show, really absorb the fact that Anthony's innocent, then let's look at the other evidence. Let's look at the other stories, the other potential suspects, and see what can be done to further investigate them. And also to jar people's memory. It's like, if you think it's all done and over with, then your mind kind of shuts down. As we're exploring the fact and showing that he's innocent, there's other things that comes to mind. You know, I'm hopeful that whoever did this has spoken about it and shared something that only the person involved would have known that we can use as evidence for a conviction. I also would like to find, the guy that was identified by the three searchers on the show as being present with a long sleeve shirt and this creepy look. He was present shortly before her body's found on that Sunday. I really would like information to identify him and find out what that person knows. So I do believe that there's a momentum that has been created and that I really want to take advantage of it to solve this once and for all, to bring justice and peace to everyone.
I feel much more skeptical than you, and forgive me for that, but I think you have to be actively doing this, and I believe the powers that be in New Philadelphia and that were involved in this case are, okay, if information comes, I'll follow up on it. Tell me if I'm wrong.
I understand why you feel that way, and it's the difficulty is, and this was my second murder case. My first murder case was in Sugar Creek, and in a murder case, you get a lot of crazy information. I'll just tell you. I mean, you'll have somebody say, "Oh, I know who did it," and then you go, "Oh, I know," and then you go talk to the person, and they say that they heard something at a bar between two. And you chase a lot of red areas, a lot of stories. Power to do all that becomes very exhaustive. And, this long afterwards, it's very difficult to pick up the pieces and try to mount another investigation and try to, in terms of all the ongoing work that they have down there, and to devote time to a cold case like this is difficult. But I believe that this story has always had a very special place in Tuscarawas County as an unsolved murder that needs attention. And I do believe that for that reason, people are, it's a 5-year-old little girl who was brutally murdered. And it just pulls at your heartstrings to find justice. And I believe that the officials involved there now do have that desire. I think the community is wants this to be resolved. I think it's kind of a black eye on their history that needs to be healed.
Is money a motivation to come forward and tell information that they may know after all these years?
A reward in a case like this, I believe could be appropriate to trigger someone's memory or to kind of give them the motivation to come forward despite, the not wanting to get involved, you can say, or to, someone, maybe they heard from somebody something and, maybe they need a little incentive. I've talked with some people about the possibility of anonymously or presenting a reward to this case, and I'm going to follow up with them. But I really, I believe someone out there knows. I know people out there know. I believe it's very very likely that they've talked, that they've shared this to somebody, and then that's the person we're looking for to come forward and to really bring justice to this case and the family.
What's next for you besides helping us all and working with us all to find justice for Devin? How about yourself? Where are you? What place are you at now?
I've turned more towards a spiritual quest in life, and I that'll be a topic of for a later date. But I believe that things don't happen. Things happen for a reason, and when you see those connections, there's a beautiful way to be in the flow of life. I really got out of the practice of law in the sense of I've got frustrated with everyone bringing me problems. As a lawyer, as a trial lawyer, litigator, you're always dealing with people's problems. I've moved into more of consulting with people before, in setting up businesses or other organizations and trying to avoid the problems as they arise. And that's kind of the focus of what I'm doing personally.
So you've reached a peace.
I have a sense of acceptance of what all happened and an understanding that, for me, my role in it and the need for this to occur. Anthony has, been really amazing in terms of how he's dealt with this over the years. When we get together and talk about it, I am much more upset. I am much more emotional about it than he is. And he's always trying to calm me down and convey that there is there's a better light coming. But I strive for that. And it's a passion. And I think once we can find the people responsible for this and have them brought to justice, that'll bring a deeper peace for me.
Well, Taryn, I want to thank you again, as always. I love speaking with you.
Thank you, Joe. And there's work to be done, and certainly prayers for Devin Dunnevern, that justice is found for her and peace.
We're going to continue. We're going to continue the fight.
I'm with you, Joe. I'm here.
Thanks, man. Take care, Taryn.
A couple things that were brought up in that, and I just... I am less cynical of the powers that be, not the powers that were. I'm still very cynical about the powers that were, but I am less cynical of people like Ryan Steyer. I spoke to Ryan Steyer in the last week. I also spoke yesterday with Sheriff Campbell. And I truly believe in those two men. I think they're passionate about wanting to solve this, wanting to get to the bottom of this. They are very interested and very knowledgeable. They're very they're dedicated men, and I truly believe in them. So that has changed me a little bit, my conversations with them. The other thing is the reward thing, and I know there is a group of people who are readying a financial reward for information for someone coming forward that leads to a conviction, and we're just waiting on direction from the people in New Philadelphia about that. We'll be right back after this. Good morning, everyone, and again, good morning. Beautiful day on Friday. I am Joe Palmisano, and I'm filling in for Jordan Miller today. And if you're just joining us, we have been trying to lay kind of an epilogue to our show in 2015 that we did here on WHBC. And the 2020 show, Gone Before the Storm, that covered the Anthony Harris trial, the murder of a five-year-old young lady whose life was literally stolen from her at 5 years in New Philadelphia back in 1998. And again, the purpose of the show is not to keep bringing it up for no reason, just because it's a big story. No. Our goal, if you've been listening for the first hour, has been by everyone who I've interviewed and myself, and for Pam Cook, who was first involved in this case back in 1998 as a reporter here at WHBC. It is to understand and the place importance in not letting this die again. And I realize that, you know, people in New Philadelphia, that Ryan Steyer, the Sheriff Campbell, and those involved have a lot on their plate. And this is a case that took place and was resolved in a matter of a couple of years after 1998. But it is still open, and it is still an open wound for the city of New Philadelphia and for all of us who have become personally involved in it. So I think that my purpose in this and in talking to these people and bringing this up again is that I think we all believe that someone knows what happened that day, what happened to Devin Dunover. And we're hoping that after this long of time, if it has eaten at them and been something that has destroyed their lives, because we all know that if there's truth out there and someone knows it, that over a period of time it will eat at you, that someone comes forward, that someone, like Taryn said earlier, that someone talked and told somebody something. And that valuable information may come forward, and that we may put an end to this finally. We may get justice, true justice for Devin Dunover, but also justice for Anthony Harris, also justice for Taryn Hale, and also justice for the citizens of New Philadelphia who, I think, we're led to believe by a rush to judgment that Anthony Harris was guilty and those who botched the investigation and got us to this point where there really isn't a ton of evidence and no DNA, like Amy said, no nothing like that, that it's going to take somebody coming forward to solve it. And that's our point in today. And when we continue and we come back after this break, we're going to speak with Nancy Molnar. Nancy Molnar is a staff writer for the Times Reporter in New Philadelphia. And she joined that staff in 2015 when we aired the initial story of Anthony Harris. When we come back, we're going to speak with Nancy Molnar and get her understanding of where this case is. Stay tuned. You know, you spend 2 minutes with Nancy Molnar and you realize that you're dealing with a very intelligent, very thoughtful person. I can only imagine what her writing is like. She joined the staff of the Times Reporter in 2015, part-time, right around the time our story came out here at WHBC, the 2 3-hour shows that we did on Anthony Harris and Devin Dunover in this whole case. She became full-time in 2016. She has always been interested in this story. There's been something that she wanted to dig into when our story came out, something that has also piqued her interest in after the 2020 case. She had thought about the case a lot, and I asked Nancy Molnar why this case interested her so much.
I had interest in the story, having remembered it from living in the area. As we approached the 20th anniversary of the death, I thought about doing a story. Or perhaps it was a little later than that, maybe the 20th anniversary of the exoneration. Mm-hmm. It popped into my mind as something I could possibly work on. Although at the time, it did not seem feasible to me just because of what I knew would be required to do a review of what had happened in the past. Because, of course, I didn't have contact information for the Harrises or the Dunivers, but I did find Taryn Hale online and knew I would have a way to contact him. But I really started by talking with some of the prosecutors and some retired police officers who I had in my circle in maybe 2018, a little later than that, 2020. And I would say the story had generally passed from the public consciousness, because when it was running hot and there was the death, the arrest, the trial, certainly that was very prominent in local news coverage. But as time went on and there was the decision by the Fifth District Court of Appeals to throw out the conviction based on the confession being obviously coerced and false, that was also followed by the public, along with the fallout in the civil lawsuits. But of course, those civil lawsuits are long since settled.
And we talked further about, I wanted to ask her what issues specifically bothered her when she started looking into this case.
To me, there were still issues that I thought needed to be resolved, of course. And those would be, what's in that special investigation report that was done subsequently? Mm-hmm. So I asked about that, and I found, of course, that I could not look at that special investigation report because it's still considered an open case. And those are investigatory records that cannot be released to the public. And reporters often make the case for public records, but in a lot of cases, we also stand in for the public. We're not more important. Our rights are not more important than those of the general public, but it's our full-time job to look into these things. So if it's an open case, I can't see that investigatory report, but nobody's saying it's a closed case either. Then I was also wondering how this case ranks among wrongful convictions in the country on a scale of most to least egregious. This seems to me, in my mind, to be the case in which a very young person was wrongfully convicted of murder. I know there have been other cases in which children have been found guilty of murder, and unfortunately, they committed some acts that did lead to someone's death. The other thing that I thought was worth looking into, which would be following from the desire to see the investigatory report, the second one, would be who killed Devin. We still don't know. And I had spoken to some people off the record who had kind of a shadowy belief that Anthony Harris was responsible. But after that 2020 show aired, I contacted those same two people off the record, who are people I turn to because they have a long experience in the community and they have good reputations and were involved in law enforcement. And I asked those two people the same question. Do you think Anthony Harris did it? And they both said, of course not. It was now clear to them that he could not have committed the murder and that the police investigation was botched, the prosecution was botched, the judge's decision was wrong. Not my opinion, the opinion of the Fifth District Court of Appeals. And now these law enforcement elders believe the same thing. And I could not believe that they held the beliefs they held prior, but I think it was probably based on that trust law enforcement officers have of each other. And they were basing their opinion on what they had been told by other law enforcement who may have been involved in that botched investigation. And I know in one case, one of these retired police officers with whom I had spoken said, things Jeff Urban told me were not correct. So those people were probably basing their prior opinion not so much on what had been covered in public, because the public record was clear. He didn't do this. That anybody involved with at least the court system who looked at it afterward saw that the conviction was wrong.
You know, I looked at this, and Jeff Urban was the man thrust into this investigation at the time. I have learned that there was a detective there who, at the time, basically didn't come back to work. Basically said, "Look, I'm not taking this case. I'm not doing this." And it was thrust on Jeff Urban, who was not a detective, and really had not investigated anything to this extent prior. And so he was forced into it. And then a person from Millersburg got involved, a chief of police there, and it just turned into the fiasco that it became. I also asked Nancy why she thought, I think everybody realizes that this whole investigation was botched. Why does she think so?
I have rolled that question around in my mind, because that investigation would have been in a different place if a different detective had been assigned to lead it. There was at least one other detective in the New Philadelphia Police Department at the time Jeff Urban ran that murder investigation. And I question why the other detective wasn't brought in on it. I understand the other detective was busy with an obligation at the time of the murder, but that obligation did not last more than 2 weeks. And instead of going to the other detective in the department, or maybe the Tuscarawas County Sheriff's Department, or any other law enforcement agency in Tuscarawas County, they went to Millersburg and got the police chief to come in and do their interrogation. Why'd they do that? That's perplexing, because if you've got a mind for murder mysteries, you'd want to know why. Why did they do it the way they did it? Because even for the time, it just doesn't make sense. They're all law enforcement officers. They're all getting paid. What can they possibly be doing that is more important than investigating the murder of a 5-year-old child? Why would you not bring to bear the resources of all the best people in that department? Well, that was a management decision to go outside to someone else. And I'm sure had the Millersburg police chief been willing to conduct a broad-based investigation, an open-minded investigation, or an open-ended interview, there might have been different results. But
here's the question, though.
Yes.
Why do you feel you have to go to find the best interrogator possible? Why? Because you want to assure a confession. Not that they want to do an interrogation to find facts, but let's go find the person who is going to give us the best chance to ensure a confession. There was just a cursory topsoil surface investigation on everybody else. You know, we did this voice stress test. We did this. We eliminated them. We did this. Anthony didn't get a voice stress test. He got an interrogation. So what we're looking at here is, I mean, I think everything is on the table here because of this. So you say, yeah, I'm going this dark spot. We've all, and anybody who's looked at this has gone to that dark spot. You're not the only one. Everybody who has really looked at this case has had to go there. Everybody has also had to go to the point a little bit of a higher level up that they made up their minds who it was. They wanted a confession. They wanted to wrap it up. They wanted to get on with things. And the thing that ruined it for all of them was a persistent, hard-headed public defender who bucked the system and fought against them and was basically ridiculed for it and made his life was miserable. But had he not bucked the system,
we wouldn't be here today even talking about this. Anthony Harris would be in prison, and we would assume that he was guilty. And that's a sad thing.
We continued my conversation with Nancy Molnar, and she was a delight, believe me, and very knowledgeable and very opinionated on this. And we asked her why there is so little information on this case, her opinion on that.
I don't know. I think I have heard what you have heard about the investigation not moving forward unless some new information of substance is presented about whether other people feel they can't buck the system because they might have to move out of town. I will say that I have had private conversations with people in high positions who know there's something wrong with this and regard it as a stain on Tuscarawas County's history and would like to see it resolved. But every person in authority does not have ultimate authority. That's not the way our government works. People of authority in the United States and in our localities have a scope of operations. And it can be impossible to go outside that scope of permitted authority without a good reason. Now, newspaper reporters have a fishing license. If I find a good story somewhere and I can satisfy my boss that I will produce a story at the end of my time, my boss is always willing to let me do that. Now, if I were a law enforcement officer in a different jurisdiction, I don't have authority to go into that other law enforcement officer's jurisdiction and mess with their cases. However, if I were in that position and I had something, there would probably be a place for me to take it. But I think the problem is right now there are a lot of people who may have an interest, but they don't have anything to go on. And I would say the reason they don't have anything to go on, as far as I have been told, is that because the original investigation into the murder was botched so badly, there isn't anything to work with in the record. And the reason I was told not to be too sad about not seeing that second investigation report is that that was based on the first investigation.
We're going to continue with Nancy Molnar. Few more questions, few more answers on this whole case as we continue right after this news and spots. As we continue this moving forward from the 2020 show and from our show in 2015 about Anthony Harris, Devin Dunover, Taryn Hale, and New Philadelphia, we continued with our discussion with Nancy Molnar, who is the staff writer for the Times Reporter in New Philadelphia. Wonderful lady. And I asked her what she felt about the 2020 show and how it affected going forward.
So I think maybe in law enforcement circles, there was some opinion circulating that Anthony Harris was guilty but got off on a technicality. And so I thought that the 2020 story, which I hoped I might have been able to do at some point, was very clear in establishing convictions can be coerced. That certainly after 80 minutes of hammering on a 12-year-old child with no attorney present, with no mother present, not even his brother, no support in there with that police officer performing a very harsh and manipulative interrogation, that couldn't possibly have been a valid confession. So I think it was valuable to take a look back. But as far as where we go now, that's in the hands of the prosecutors.
And then I asked her, I wanted to know, because I believe someone knows. I believe there's someone out there who someone has spoken to or that knows what happened to Devin Dunover. And it's not that big of a community. It's, you know, I think people know, and I believe someone still knows. And I asked her how she feels about that.
I think it's possible that someone knows and is still around. It is also possible there was someone who knew who is now deceased. Certainly, the killer knows. Yeah. I don't know if the killer is dead or alive, because I don't know who the killer is. And I don't know if there's a way to find out based on the evidence that was mishandled, not gathered in the initial investigation.
I guess that's what we're talking about now as an epilogue is we're looking for the truth. We're looking for, you know, Anthony has moved on. Taryn has moved on. Their lives have been forever changed by this. They went through dark periods. They still go through some dark periods because of this. But you have a five-year-old girl who's been killed, and you have a community that isn't completely healed and never will be, and no one knows the truth. My point of this show and my point of this continuing battle is to know the truth. There's a person out there who did this and is walking free, and that just irritates me to no end and angers me, and that's where we are.
And as we continue in this, I'm asking people, because I'm not going to let it go. It's become a personal part of me. Anthony's become part of my life. Taryn has become part of my life. Devin has become part of my life. And all the people that I have spoken with have all become part of a mission to find the truth. And you know, it'd be easy to say, I just want to let this go. I just want to be done with this. But I don't think we can. I can't look myself in the eye in the mirror and say, I'm willing to just let this go. I'm willing to just let it drop. Because someone knows the truth. And I would ask that if anybody's listening to this, if anybody has influence over anybody who may know something, that you get in touch with the sheriff, Orvis Campbell, or Ryan Steyer. But I, I will say this again. I know that there are people out there anonymously who are going to offer a reward for information. I don't know when we're going to do that. I don't know when those in control of those funds are able to put that out. But it's going to happen. And at that point, when the sheriff thinks it's appropriate, when Ryan Steyer, the prosecutor in Tuscarawas County, thinks it's appropriate, that's when we'll do it. And hopefully we will move this thing along. Because, again, you've heard it from multiple people, the botched investigation, the rush to judgment, where they just dropped everything, didn't truly investigate others, the person that they searchers found in the woods, the fact that the dogs, which wasn't brought up in the 2020 episode, two sets of dogs went to a barn or a garage adjacent to a house. These dogs were 3 hours apart. All four of them went to the same garage. They didn't go to where Devin's body was, where her body was found. So this is all important information that needs to be looked at. And I know it's going to be now. I know that it's important for enough people to do this. And we're going to need your help in the whole thing. When we come back, Pam Cook was involved from the beginning. She's the one who brought my attention to this story and really spurred my whole passion in bringing this all to life in 2015, bringing it to life for two different shows. And also because of that, WHBC and Pam and I in particular were very much a part of the 2020 episode, the reunion, everything that took place. And I want Pam to come in and join us again, because I at the end of this show, to kind of wrap it up, just to get her thoughts on where we are, what we need to do, what are we going to do, what are we willing to do, how much are we willing to put ourselves out to truly get justice for Devin Dunover, and at the same time get justice for the entire community of New Philadelphia, and for Taryn, and for Anthony, and for Anthony's mother, Cindy, and for everyone involved. So we're going to continue to wrap this up right after this. We're going to bring Pam Cook in and get her thoughts on this going forward. Stay tuned. As I said before we went to break, that this show was important, I think, because what do we do now? We have all this information. We had the information in 2015. It kind of went away. We did 6 hours of revealing everything about this case with Anthony Harris and everything that took place in the murder of Devin Dunover. Then we have 2020 coming up, and it comes up, and people start talking again. It's important that we grasp this at this moment and not let it die. That was the reason why I was excited to do this show today. And a person who's been with this from the very beginning, person who's been in the courthouse, was at the courthouse every day, person that brought this to my attention when I was doing the show in 2015, and that's Pam Cook. And Pam, when you look back on all this, where we are now, I know you've got to feel that sense of urgency, like we've got to do something with this now before it dies again, because we'll never have this again.
No, I'll tell you, it's this is very weird, because, you know, sitting there listening to today, I kind of go back and I look at 2015. Actually, I look back at the very beginning, because, you know, when I first covered this trial, and I think about the courthouse every day, and, you know, the impact that the case had on me. This is all very surreal to me right now. And even watching 2020 was surreal. And 2015, you doing that show was very surreal, because all of that, I just remember being in New Philadelphia. I remember sitting through it, and I never, ever expected all of these things to happen. I mean, I watched all of that happen. I watched Anthony's face. I watched his mother's face. I heard the judge. I heard the things that happened and saw all of it play out, and then it ended. And then I just never thought it was anything was going to ever come of it. And so you kind of just forgot about it. Mm-hmm. You know, there were news stories. There were more news stories. There were more things I covered. There were other things, and nothing was ever going to happen after that. And then I remember telling you the story, just, you know, I don't even know how we came to talk about it, Joe, honest to goodness.
I think I remember you just telling me, you know, I covered this story back at this time, you told me, and it was about a 12-year-old.
It was unbelievable.
And so.
And I think it had a lot to do with race. I think because you and I were talking about race.
Yes.
I believe that that's where it came from. And so, and then you took it and ran with it. And that was, and I was just so overwhelmed by that. And seeing Anthony come here, you know how I felt that day when he walked into this building. I was just, I couldn't even speak. And I took that video that they showed on 2020 on my phone.
Yes, I remember that.
I don't know if a lot of people realize that, but that was before cell phones were a big thing. And I can remember you going, I don't know, do you want to take that? Do you want to do that? And, you know, you want to do that? This is like a personal moment. And yeah, we were like kind of hesitant about that. It was not when people did that kind of thing. And I'm like, no, I think I need to capture this.
Oh, and it was so good.
I'm so glad.
It meant so much to Taryn.
It did.
And to Anthony, to have that come on the air. I thought it was perfect.
And I put it on my phone, and I took that and took the pictures, and it meant everything. And so that happened, and I was thrilled, and you were thrilled, and we were like, okay. And then that was it, Joe. I mean, that was, you know, it happened, and that was 7 years ago.
Right.
And then comes 2020.
Right.
And so it happens again.
Yes.
And so, and when Maddie, the producer of 2020, called me and said they were bringing this up again, I'm going, my gosh. And that's when I said to her, you know, she talked to me for quite a long time. And then I said to her, you need to talk to Joe. You've got to talk to Joe. And she did. And then that's what happened. And here we are again. So now, like you, I feel like, okay, this is the time. Yes. We can't let it stop again.
Yes.
Can't let it stop again, because this is our
opportunity.
Because
it will stop again.
It will. Because,
and if it stops another 5 years, it's done.
That's right.
It's done.
And we can sit here and say, okay, 2020, Anthony's, you know, moving on and put his life together, and, you know, and there's Taryn, and we know where they stand and all of those things. But at the same time, and I just came home from a trip, and I had people, friends who live in Florida, say, so where's the mother, and what happened with the this, and why? They had a million questions.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, they have questions. Why don't we here in this area have the questions, and why aren't we getting the answers, just like you say all the time?
Yeah, and I think we have to attack this right now.
Yeah.
And I know you want to. I know Taryn wants to. I truly believe, and this is such a great feeling of hope now, because of Ryan Steyer and because of Sheriff Campbell.
Yeah.
Those two men give me hope and confidence that if there is any way to find truly who killed Devin Dunover, that those two men will do it.
Yeah. Orvis Campbell has been around in Tuscarawas County for a very long time. I do. And he has been a great law enforcement person for a very long time. And if anybody can do it, he can. You know, certainly can.
I felt after speaking with him last night, I felt very confident that if there's a way, he'll find it. And that it means very much to him and to Ryan that this takes place. I don't feel the confidence with everybody else, the police department, anybody else down there, but I feel confident in the sheriff's department and those under control of the justice department, Ryan Steyer and them.
Because, and here's the other part too, Joe, because when, you know, 2020 is 2020, and, you know, cool and awesome stuff that we were on 2020 and the station was featured and the story and all of that. But there was a lot. I mean, you were there talking to their producers and being interviewed for a very long time. I sat there for 2.5 hours. They would have kept me longer if I didn't have to be somewhere, you know. But there was a lot that they didn't get to. There was a lot that they didn't talk about. There were a lot of things that you did, going to the attorney general's office, going to places and digging and trying and pushing to get information that just, you know, couldn't get and or wouldn't get,
yes,
that, you know, that they didn't bring up. I mean, you know, obviously they've got their parameters to work with, and I'm not faulting them for that. But, you know, there was a lot there that didn't come out. And so that's just,
And those are interesting, because I think, you know, when you look at the dogs, and I mentioned the dogs, that wasn't in 2020.
Yeah.
But the search dogs that didn't go to her body, that went to somewhere else, all of them, 4 of them at 2 different times, they didn't get into the murder weapon that they thought was the murder weapon, that they hypothesized that it was a murder weapon until they did the DNA on it. All the things that went into this case, that have tainted it for so long.
Yeah.
That now we're at this point where it's going to take someone coming forward.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe someone will come forward. You have to believe that. How could you let this go that long and not have it just destroy you? My only hope is that person's still alive.
Yeah. Because it's been so long.
And we find the person who, the guy in the flannel shirt.
Yeah.
How do three different searchers see that same person? And the body turns up. Was the body moved? Was it placed? Was it, you know, there? This is a, you know, the reason 2020 is because it's captivating, obviously.
Yeah.
But it truly is a true crime story.
And people go, how could certain things be ignored?
Yeah.
I mean, how and why were certain things ignored? You know, how and why were so, and that was, you know, a lot of the frustration of Taryn. You know, Taryn can only work through the parameters of law.
But he wasn't even allowed to.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
He was shouted down mm-hmm. and told to shut up.
Yeah.
And yeah. ridiculed mm-hmm. in the media. And I've read some of those articles that were written. I mean, basically blasting. First of all, blasting people like you for coming out of town and being there.
Yeah.
And the national media.
Yeah.
Secondly, blasting Taryn. And then saying that Anthony wasn't your typical 12-year-old.
Yeah,
he was because big. He was taller, he was probably involved. You know, 12-year-olds are involved in drugs, and they're involved in gangs, and they're trying to paint him in that light was truly, as you were living through that, that had to be drive you crazy.
That's one of the things that in my 2020 interview, the discussion that they didn't use on the air was how frustrated I was in the courtroom, because when I did get a seat, sometimes we had the seat in the courtroom, sometimes we didn't. They, you know, didn't let us in all the time, but or we had a chair. But I can just remember having my head down and just writing and like breaking the pen. You know, I was so frustrated, and because they were saying things that I just was like, what are you? Oh my God. And when the judge just admonished his mom, you know, that was one of the most frustrating things. I just wanted to stand up and say, you know, listen, sister, you know, me and my mouth, I could have gotten thrown in jail, but I just, it was terrible. It was a terrible feeling.
Well, this,
it's very frustrating.
We're going to continue this fight. And I told Taryn we're going to, and I thank you for allowing me to come in and do this epilogue and this moving forward at the same time. I want to also thank Billy Beebe for hours and hours and hours of probably 15, 20 hours of work that was put in to produce this show. I hope that it has some results. I hope that we end up ultimately finding the killer of Devin Dunover, bringing peace to everyone involved, including New Philadelphia. It's a great place, and it needs this peace, and it doesn't need to be held under the people who were involved with pushing this forward. I want to thank you all for listening. I want to thank WHBC for allowing me to do this, and Pam Cook and Larry Gothrop. And you'll have a great day. Have a great weekend, everybody.